Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to quickly have an intro and talk about some FFG news. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the back of the 2.0 box, which we have a picture of. And then we're joined by Dusty, who is the Octagon League champion, to tell us a little bit about his deck and his experience in the league. And then we have some closing comments.
All right, this is episode 9, and for the third time in a row, it's going to be an episode that's going to run a little long. So I don't know if we can go over store championship news in detail.
Well, we'll have to do it quick.
I'm going to start with some news, because there is a fair bit of official news out of FFG as well as unofficial news. The first one that comes to mind is that J.C. Wama's Game of Thrones 2.0 articles, the speculative ones, are continuing. And so this week, his own article on Tyrell was posted and was quite well received as well. It was somewhat ballsy to write the Tyrell article before anyone had actually confirmed Tyrell, but later that week, Tyrell was confirmed. So his efforts were not in vain.
Would have been awesome if it wasn't confirmed just after he posted it.
Yeah. If it was like, oh, House Aaron and the Night's Watch.
Time for Wolves is still on the boat, which kind of sucks.
They updated it, and so I got the alert that said, okay, they updated the site, and I go check, and it says, still on the boat. I'm not sure what was updated.
You know what? It's kind of cool that they did update it, though, because it tells you that it's probably accurate.
Yeah, well, so it's still on the boat, but it's actually still on the boat. Other news that was somewhat interesting, there actually is a ton of news to come out of this Gamma, Game Manufacturers Association conference, but there was a lot of stuff to do with Star Wars, like them renewing their license and talking about Imperial Assault and Armada and X-Wing.
Oh,
and so
yeah,
on.
Imperial Assault, I'm enjoying that.
But they did publish an FAQ for the Star Wars LCG, it's saying that this was a little earlier than what they would normally do for regionals, but it's because they finally got some new cards they've been waiting for so long. But the errata that they put in were errata to make their old cards work with some of their new ones, and it sort of gives my spine this horrible, twitchy, awful feeling to do functional errata like that. Like, that's kind of like if you errated the old Maester Aemon so that he could have chains because you printed the Maester's Path.
Star Wars, who cares?
It bothers me.
What's cool, though, is regionals are supposed to affect worlds in some way.
Yeah, so this is news that we can't claim credit for at all. This is Mark Downing from Missouri who contacted 2C1C, and I have this news secondhand through 2C1C. But there's apparently some information at that Gamma conference about regionals changing a little bit so that Worlds winners will bring back some swag for their stores, I think a plaque and some tournament kits for free to help support their local scene. But the biggest news out of that for their support for regionals is that, in theory, new game-specific tournament software is supposed to be out before regionals.
Yeah.
That's about awesome. Time. That is awesome. It is. I mean, their current tourney magistrate is absolutely horrendous and doesn't do certain things that some of the other games needed to do. Hopefully, whatever new software they have has an output that can go straight into the annals. I would love that. It'd be less work for everyone. I'm more than happy to change the annals so it works with that software. But it also means that, for instance, for 2.0, we could expect there to be software right out of the bat. What else is there? I mentioned last week that QR codes were broken. Turns out that they're only partly broken. If you scan them with a phone, you can still see the cards. But if you try and enter the URL on a computer, you can't unless you use a plug-in for your browser so it pretends it's a phone. So the QR still codes still work, and we should be able to link to those images again. We just have to pay a little bit more attention to how we do it. I don't know if this is intentional or not, but I just wanted to correct it. And again, thank Mark Downing for pointing this out.
We got some stuff on 2.0 that came out, which is really exciting. Basically, two slides. One we're going to talk about ad nauseum, right? A picture of the back of the POX, and then a little piece from a presentation, which has some cool stuff on it.
Yeah, we'll definitely link both images with the cast. This first one is the front of the box, which I know has a Danny that you do not like.
Yeah, I hate. She's a man, Danny.
A man, Danny. I like it, but... And clearly we have different tastes in men.
Yeah.
So this says that Game of Thrones 2.0 is set to receive the most marketing and promotional pre-launch support of any LCG to date.
That means they might spend $5, Alex.
they've promoted their LCGs in the past.
Yeah, kind of.
They've had teaser articles on their own site. I think on Board Game Geek, I've occasionally seen banners for their LCGs. I know I've seen them for a thing. But they also gave out, for instance, free copies at Worlds of the Star Wars LCG.
I didn't even know that.
Pre-launch support. Yeah, you were there.
Oh, yeah.
That's in 2012.
Right,
that's pre-launch support because the game wasn't out for another 2.5 months. So they have done this in the past.
All these things that you've mentioned all target people already playing this type of game. I want new blood.
I want new blood as well, yeah.
I want real, like, go into my store and see a big banner that says, you know, Game of Thrones 2.0.
Winter's coming. Yeah. August something, 2000, yeah.
Exactly. You know, join the first tournament on this date.
That works, by the way, in Canada. Winter's coming August 7th, 2015. Perfectly legitimate.
Yep. It's that cool. Winter's here.
But I think that they will be doing that sort of store support because the same slide says that they'll be sending kits to stores that include 4 demo decks, learn to play rules, a demo script, and a store poster for free. So your store requests this, or hopefully, I'm kind of hoping that comes out before Gen Con.
That'd be awesome.
I suspect it'll probably be around the same time as Gen Con because if they sell product at Gen Con and then there's a little lead time before their mass production hits so that they can ship it out to stores. Mm-hmm. If they, like, the day they release the product, they also send out the demo kits to stores so everyone can sort of get stuff. And then 2-3 weeks when the stores get it, they've already built up some excitement for it. I think that's probably the way they'll do it.
Yeah, that way they can have people bringing the actual Game of Thrones game back from Gen Con, plus new people trying it. You know, that'll hopefully pump up all the metas. Because I'd like to see, you know, big tournaments happening regularly like they do with Magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, upon seeing this kit includes 4 demo decks thing, I called my local game store and I was checking to see whether they had news of this. They said they hadn't yet, but if this was a thing, they would definitely order it. And if I could set aside a day on one of their big Magic events to also help run these as well when they come.
Nice.
So I've talked to the store. I really want to make that effort to promote the game, and they're wholly backing me. They say, okay, if they're going to send us this thing for free, we're happy to dedicate some tables to it on a night where we have events. So I think that's the thing that other people can try and do as well. You know, call your store and say, look, I'm willing to help demo this. I have familiarity with the old game. I'm willing to put the time in. Will you guys give the nominal support that the store has to give? And they will. And the last piece of news then, I guess, is that second slide to the back of the box, which we
have talked about a lot.
Yes, as you said, ad nauseum. So we'll make that its own segment. So we're joined for this speculation, I guess. We've got the first real news about 2.0 content since November.
Yep. And all we have is this really cool picture, or pictures, I should say.
And you started the sentence by introducing me, but then didn't introduce me.
That's actually, we'll say it's because you need no introduction, right? That's the kind of flattery you're expecting.
Well, yeah, let's just go with that, I guess.
You've been on the show a few times.
It's Florian, yes. Well, I guess maybe we should start with a guess. What's the first thing that strikes you looking at this box?
I think the first thing that struck me was pure awesomeness. I'm really hyped for the box, and I hope it's just going to be the thing we all expect. And then what struck me next was those awful just yellow and green bars at the left-hand side of the characters.
Okay, on the character frames.
Yeah.
for Robert and presumably Olena, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Does that banner bother you when you see the cards, like the start cards on the bottom? I guess they're far enough away that you can't really, it's not as irritating.
Yeah. No.
It doesn't contrast as much with the text box there, so I'm wondering if that's what it is that catches the eye.
I can't really discern it from this perspective anyway.
No.
It's a bit too small.
I first looked at the layout, and I've seen a couple people complain. I have some complaints of the layout for the cards. Like, I think the icons look a little too big. But I don't like the Conquest templating for the cards at all. I don't
like
the fact that they change from faction to faction, or whatever they're called. Faction, I think, in Conquest as well. So, for instance, on the Eldar ones, the strength is in a rounded icon, and in the Imperial Guard, it's in a square icon, and so on, in roughly the same place. But I find the frames very busy, and I find that they change too much from card to card. So my first instinct upon looking at this, knowing that they were going to take lots and lots of cues from Conquest, was being really happy that they took lots and lots of cues from Lord of the Rings instead, which I think is one of their most beautiful games for card templating, layout, and everything. So I didn't even notice the fact that, like, the name for Robert's in the middle of the card, and the name for presumably Longclaw's at the bottom, and the name for whatever that third card is at the top, because all of that templating just reminds me of Lord of the Rings, which I really like.
You know, I didn't even notice that the name for Longclaw was at the bottom until you pointed it out, Alex, but that's kind of cool, because it would make attachments easy to put on. Like, I could just kind of cover the picture and still get the text and the name of the attachment.
Well, that doesn't change anything, because you could do it the other way around, too, right? If it's at the top, then you can put it at the top.
Yeah, but then I would hide the text when I put it under my character. So this way,
so you
can actually put it under...
You can have all the text, I suppose. Okay.
It's not that great of a change for me, because I'm more of a put the attachment under the card so that the name box looks out at the top kind of dude. So this change is not really great for me, because I just don't like it that way. So I guess it's a preference thing.
Yeah.
As for the yellow, I mean, I guess that's one of the changes. We're definitely seeing the Bera as yellow, which I don't think is surprising anyone once we found out that there are eight factions. And then the second thing is that presumably means Tyrell is the green. I don't necessarily mind the colors. Normally, when they have color like that, they have some texturing, and I'm not sure we can see the texturing in this resolution to make it look less like just a yellow bar or a green bar.
I still think they could have just put a banner where this bar is, just a light banner in the background where this yellow bar is, with maybe a stack on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
Not very prominent, but so there's something for the eye there. Now it's just, it's just safe. It's just the whole thing is safe. There's nothing here that could offend anybody's eyes. It's just very pleasant. I think it's a little too pleasant, but that's kind of the...
So you mean not gritty enough? Not Game of Thronesy enough? Or just...
I think they're just not... Yeah, not Game of Thronesy enough. Nobody in a medieval world would design a card like that. Like,
okay. Do you really want all the cards to be different sizes on blackened, stained paper with...
No, not like that, but I mean...
Pieces of the Bible.
In terms of just general setting, I think they could have done a little bit more.
That it's a little too clean. I can see that.
Yeah, but even then, I don't know. You know what? I like playing the game. What's important to me is the mechanics. So the things that jumped out to me wasn't the template and the colors, because that's secondary. What jumped out to me was 7 gold characters and 5 strength on these characters.
Well, there's a really good point. You looked at this card and you knew exactly what the gold cost was, what the strength was, what the icons were. That speaks well for it. They haven't drastically played with the templating.
No, for sure. And it looks like there's a little unique symbol or something before Robert Baratheon's name, too. So it's like a little black dot.
It doesn't look like the flag, does it? Yeah.
You know, something. I don't know. A dot of whatever. Something indicating unique, I would assume.
What else can we sort of tell from looking at these cards in general about the game?
I think the focus of the game is going to be much more about building up your economy, in the sense of, because now there's no taxation phase anymore, you can save gold and then carry it over to the next turn and then play a bigger threat. And that opens up...
You said there was no taxation.
I think it was mentioned in the first announcement of the game.
Oh, that'd be interesting. A very different dynamic.
I remember them mentioning that in the Mike Hurley interview that all phases were being preserved at that time and that reserve was being checked in taxation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Reserve is supposed to be checked at taxation. So there has to be a taxation phase.
But I was rather sure that they wanted to get away from the taxation in the sense of you have to give away all your gold.
Well, I guess it could be lose one gold or lose two gold to stop you from accumulating too much from turn to turn.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be all your gold.
Because that would explain why bigger characters or stronger characters cost 7 gold, because I don't think they're going to print characters that cost 7 gold that when you have to give away all your gold at the end of the turn. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Swaths could be 12 gold for all we know. Like, they could have just ramped up the whole gold curve in general.
Well, they talked about expanding the gold curve, and I'm thinking, I need more gold tokens then. But we can only see the gold cost of 2 cards, but 7 gold for 5 strength to me sort of tells me that we're looking at a different curve. This wouldn't
different
have
gold
been a 7.
Yeah,
this wouldn't have
a different
been a 7
game.
Well, I guess a different game.
Like, would they have 0 costs?
I kind of hope not. I kind of feel like every play should have a cost.
I think.
I guess it's a card cost, so it's kind of a tough call.
If they expand the gold curve, like go with higher gold costs as a maximum, that at least opens up possibilities to be more distinguished with individual gold costs to give you more appropriate costings for each sort of effect. And I think they wanted to get rid of influence as well. So if everything costs gold, then you have to have a lot more, as you call it, a higher resolution to be able to give every effect its appropriate cost. So I think that could be a sign of that happening.
Now, 7 gold character Robert Baratheon, I'm almost certain that reads King, Lord, something... Probably renown after that.
Intimidate.
I've heard that. I really hope it isn't. I've also heard the initiative to read that, which I thought might be like a new vigilant if you're the first player. I mean,
that's
I guess
not initiative.
No.
No. I'm dyslexic and I can read that.
I can't. What do you see there, Flo?
Intimidate. Renown.
I see an I. There's an I, and maybe there's a T in it, but I'm not sure. It's really hard to tell. Fringe. Definitely renowned, though.
And he's getting +1 strength for every something characters in play?
I'm not sure if that's a 1 or a 3 on the strength, actually.
That's a +1 strength for each.
Yeah, I think it's a 1.
Other something character in play.
For each other something character in play, yeah. Maybe each other Baratheon. No, that doesn't look like it. Maybe.
It could be Baratheon. Maybe kneeling. It could be kneeling. For each other, kneeling character in play.
Oh, I could see kneeling.
He's the king. That makes some sense. But it's interesting that Intimidate is a Baratheon thing now. Well, maybe not, because, I mean, they're currently the house that's in charge, so it makes sense that they'll be able to win conflict without opposition. You know, to come. Assuming the keywords are the same, which I'm just assuming they are.
Renown is going to be the same. Renown is the mental part of the game.
Well, I would think all of them are going to be the same, right?
So. It could be something entirely different. Something we haven't seen yet, like, I don't know. I could see it being Immaculate, actually.
Immaculate? How would you ever call Robert Immaculate?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the word could be the same, but it's similar, but I don't think Robert Baratheon could be called that. So.
No.
I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm gonna pretend it's Intimidate, and I'm going to say that with a new color, Baratheon has a whole new type of mechanic, where maybe it's not about, you know, multi-standing and tons of power rush. Maybe it's more about being able to push through unopposed challenges. Maybe Baratheon's the new unopposed house. How do you feel about that, Alex?
I don't feel good about that at all. First of all, I really hope that's not Intimidate, because
what was
I think
the last
Intimidate
fight?
Is clunky in 1.0. So many people don't realize it affects their own characters within the challenge, and it does some weird stuff.
Maybe they cleaned it up. Maybe they cleaned it up, and it just works all the time, and it doesn't work on your own characters. Or,
I mean, I guess that would work somewhat with the fact that he's getting plus strength bonuses, so he becomes more powerful for that. But when has Robert won unopposed challenges? He's been opposed every step of the way.
Until he became king, and then ever since then he's been sitting with no challenges because everyone just folds, and he's been getting fat and sitting around. It's perfect.
I think, as I wrote that article for Greyjoy, I think unopposed challenges should stick with Greyjoy. I think the idea of sort of sneaking in when all the North is in the South playing at war and taking over all their base is distinctly a Greyjoy thing.
Well, that's stealth. Maybe Greyjoy has stealth, but maybe the Baratheons are the unopposed kings.
Remember, speaking of Greyjoy,
he comes out and opposes them until he dies, and then all hell breaks loose. No one's trying to vie for the Iron Throne while Robert's alive.
Are you kidding? What do you think Cersei and Littlefinger and so on are all doing?
They all love Robert except for the Cersei. She hates the Robert.
So you were saying, speaking of Greyjoy?
Speaking of Greyjoy, we have a card that looks like an event, I think, in the background, which is called the Kraken somewhat.
Yeah, I really can't see it. To me, the word looks like shrimp, and I'm certain it's not
the Kraken shrimp.
But the word looks like shrimp to me.
That'd be amazing. I would love that.
The Kraken shrimp.
The shrimp's reach on Westeros or something.
I mean, that's either an event or a location. Right? Because we see the template for Longclaw, which is that sort of rounded edges, unless they're really different for each faction. But given that Olenna and Robert look about the same for templating, it looks to me like we can safely assume that's the character template and Longclaw is the attachment template. And that third thing is either location or event. And if it's got the word the Kraken something, it's probably an event. If you look at the back row of the Lannister cards, there's a card there that doesn't have the templating that we've seen on any of the display cards.
Yeah, so
that's probably a location So it's a fairly safe bet that the Kraken shrimp is an event card. But can you see what it says at all?
I think it refers to strength. It has like something like strength 5.
Okay.
Between
I can
the
see
Iron
that.
Throne token and Longclaw.
And it's got some bold text on top of that, so it's probably whatever phase it figures in. And maybe that first word is...
Could be like challenges.
Choose? I think we're grasping at straws.
Choose, yeah. It could be choose.
5 or less?
Yeah, choose and something with strength 5 or less. That sounds plausible.
Choose Robert Baratheon and kill
him. Is that a 5 or a 3?
Put on your reading glasses, gentlemen.
Yeah, this is scary.
This is
I don't think there's much more
territory
to talk about this box because you can't see anything.
Yeah, that describes this whole episode quite well.
Exactly.
By the way, I really hope that attachments are going to be playable in the second edition, and not only attachments that read, "Oh yeah, I'm going to steal your Viper," but also attachments that are just positive attachments that can go on your own characters.
Hopefully. But if you look at the sample game with the Starks and the Lannisters on this table, there's not a single attachment on the board. So if that's effective, there you go. Attachments are crap in 2.0.
Damn. Yeah.
It's worth noting that they confirm in the box text that there's House Tyrell, and apparently, the way it's phrased, it says, you know, join one of these great houses, or take the Black and champion the Night's Watch. And I've heard a lot of speculation that this might mean that Night's Watch is a different victory condition. That seems the way they've worded it to me, and it kind of worries me. I hope that's not the case.
I think that's just because, semantically speaking, that could just mean because the Night's Watch isn't a house, so they had to put it not in the same part of the sentence as the houses to make sense in context. I don't think that necessarily implies that Night's Watch is going to have a different victory condition.
But wouldn't it be awesome if they did?
No,
because
I don't think
they're not a house. They're not trying to vie for power or take the throne.
They are, though, and they have traditionally in the past.
Trying to take the Iron Throne.
Not the Iron Throne, but do you think all of these people are playing specifically to grab the Iron Throne?
Yeah, take
over
the
Greyjoys are not. The Greyjoys are just vying for power. They're trying to have the Seastone Chair in their kingdom and restore.
They
the
want
power.
To be the kings, yeah, of all the Westeros.
No, they don't.
I think Greyjoy?
No, they just want to go back to the old ways and be their own kings.
Yeah, I'm with Alex on this one.
I think Florian's right. I think it's just because they have to say house and faction, but they could just say, you know, join one of the great the eight great factions vying for power in Westeros. That would have been fine. So I don't know if I really like that particular wording. Again, I hope not, because asymmetric gameplay, that's Star Wars' thing. That's Netrunner's thing. I would.
And maybe Conquest's thing.
Asymmetric gameplay? Oh, right, with the new Tyranids, yeah.
The new Tyranids?
That may be quite asymmetric, but...
Maybe Tyranids are just the testing state, and the Game of Thrones is the actual product they're testing for with the Tyranid box.
That's right. I am...
Conspiracy.
Something else that I noticed from the text in that box is that it says it's a 2-to-4-player game. The online announcement had announced that it was 2-to-6-player, that Melee had supported 6. And that seems to be a conflict. I don't know if that's because they scaled it back and decided they didn't want 7-hour 6-player melees.
Yeah, you ever play a 6-player melee? It's so long.
But they do say in the game contents there, I can see what definitely looks like 6 title cards, 8 faction cards, right? So 6 title cards would be what you would need for a 6-player melee. And, I mean, it's what we have right now for a default 4-player melee. But
right. Well, I've seen, I think, 8- or 9-player melee games at Starlake, but those were always under the influence of alcohol and not really that much of a competitive environment.
So another thing I know is it looks like plots are still sideways, and there seems to be plots because there's kind of like a play area on the box, and you can see there's what to me looks like plots, I guess. House card, power tokens, gold tokens, and something else.
Speaking of plots, though, I only see, and this is really blurry because it's off in the distance, but I only see 3 icons there, and we're expecting gold initiative claim and reserve value, right? I don't see, maybe there's 4, maybe that... No, I really think there's only 3.
I can't see any icons. I don't know how you're doing that.
No, but like on the left of the plot, there seems to be like 3 sort of dots. No?
Yeah, I see what you're referring to. It's incredibly unclear.
That's right. I don't know. I'd expect there to be 4, right? Maybe they're doing away with initiative? I don't know.
I think reserve value could be something that just didn't pan out the way they wanted it to during testing, because it pushes you into certain directions with your design, because all your resource and income providers work a different way now, and everything that is cheap is suddenly incredibly powerful because you have to discard down anyway at the end of the phase. So it could... imagine that the reserve value got altered or just
scrapped,
removed entirely from the game.
It could also be where they used to put the traits. It could just say, like, written in little bold, like reserve 20 or whatever. I don't know.
Reserve 20, God, I hope not.
Or reserve 7 or whatever.
Damn, now I have to discard 10 cards with my Bloodthirst.
So whatever the reserve, it could just be written on each plot. Like, it might not have its own icon.
So you mentioned the gold and power tokens, and then
and
something
this other
else.
Token. Yeah. This red token.
Oh, I was thinking, like, the Iron Throne-looking token between the gold and power in the playfield.
Oh, I just assumed that was, like, a player, like, initiative token, who's first player or something stupid like that.
Yeah, that's probably it. I mean, they introduced the same token for initiative in Conquest, and I think it's a really good idea, because I had situations in tournaments where it was unclear, based on the statements, who was first player at the beginning of the marshalling phase, which was just not happening. And just having a physical act of giving someone a token is much more of a binding agreement on who has initiative than just the word at the end of the plot phase. Mm-hmm. So that's a good step, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is as well, because it's what they've done in Lord of the Rings, it's what they've done in Conquest, and all the other sort of where all the players are playing the same game, not like Netrunner and so on. But I have heard, and this actually comes from Kenan, was thinking that maybe this might be something to do with dominance. If you win dominance, you get the token, and while you have the token, you gain some cards gain power or something like that, which I thought was a neat mechanic. The idea of, we've talked about increasing the value of dominance in general. I still think this is a first-player token, because that's what the other games have used it for. But this is speculation, so let's speculate.
I think we should just apply a simple razor here and just assume that the thing with the least assumptions to be made is the correct thing. because I don't think they're going to go overboard with new mechanics with the new release, because they want to be very safe, because it's a very big deal. It's a Game of Thrones. It's a huge IP. And I don't think they're going to be too inclined to change too many things in order to keep it clean.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the red token, but it's right next to a blue token as well. These things that look kind of like a seal.
I thought like they were power tokens.
No, because you can see the power tokens on the house card, and they're white on blue. But maybe that's just different renditions of it. But to me, the blue and the red ones look almost the same.
Maybe the tokens are double-sided.
I hadn't even thought of that. I was thinking that maybe they were for your relationships in Melee, to go with the title cards to find out who you support and who you oppose or something.
I assume they were like Conquest tokens that they're guys. You know, in Conquest, you have the tokens for the each house or fact, whatever they call it, Conquest, have tokens that are actually characters, people.
So, like, recruit a new recruit for the Night's Watch, and you put a blue token in play?
Exactly. You know, maybe they have two different types each, and it's double-sided. So it's like blue's a recruit, and, you know, the red one is the next upgrade.
Yeah, why wouldn't that be a card token?
So you can exhaust it and
yeah.
Or
Neo. Because this is just, this seems weird to be.
Is that what they do? They use a card token in
Conquest, yeah.
Okay. I see. I don't play enough Conquest. I played a few times, that's it. Okay, so yeah, that does make more sense. Yeah, you can't exhaust a circle.
Well, maybe you'd be busy doing that.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why it's two colors. It's red, it's active, blue, it's inactive or something. But why not just print a rectangle you're right, Florian?
Or, if you want to go even deeper, it could be if an attachment grants a character an icon, you can put this on the character to symbolize that icon.
So maybe there's three colors, one for military, one for power, and then another one for intrigue for green. And then we're just not seeing it. It could be where that reflection is on
that's
the box.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think that is not very likely.
No, but, well, I did say the icons look too big, and those coins look too big, so really, it would be fitting. Cover three quarters of the art when you create yourself three icons. Yeah, so what else is on the box? There's that red text, which to me looks like it says not compatible something cards, so it's probably the first edition cards.
Yeah, I think the last word on the first line is says one first edition. Oh, no.
The first one says Game of Thrones second edition.
Yeah.
And then I think it's not compatible probably with
first
edition cards. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, because it was super annoying when they produced the starter set based on the show that was useless and everywhere else.
Yeah, here they have to be clear that this is the new starting point, which is what they say. It, you know, offers a new starting point for experienced and new players alike and all that. And they're going with the you can scan the box to see the content, which I think is generally a good policy. So there is actually one thing that I should mention, because I was talking to Mark from Missouri, who had actually gone to the conference. He didn't get a chance to see the box, but he tried to figure out the QR code for this. And he did, in fact, figure out what the QR code is within the FFG app and looked it up. And unfortunately, it's a placeholder for now. But that does mean that if we keep refresh, we might find out what the content is before it's actually released. I think it's the usual ffgapp.com/QR/something, except for this one, it's GT01, I think. Let me double check that. GT01. So if you bookmark that and you spam it, and maybe someday you'll see all the cards.
We know Alex will be, so he'll let you all know right away.
That's right. It'll be part of my morning routine is to refresh that. I have to admit, I'm surprised to see the box. Do you guys think this is a box with all the cards, etc., or this is a mock-up?
Where was the spoiler anyway? It wasn't an official spoiler, was it?
No, this was at the Gamma, which is like the Game Something Manufacturers Association conference. In, I think it was Ohio. This was, I think it was somewhere in the back, and it was shown to a few people. I don't think this is official in any way, but I'm surprised to see that it exists this early.
So maybe this isn't even the final version. Maybe they'll still have a graphical designer look over this. maybe we're getting something
pretty polished.
Well, see, that's the thing. It looks pretty polished, and it's sealed in plastic wrap. It's not like it's some printout on a piece of paper. So it looks like if it's done, does it really take that long for them to ramp up production for Gen Con?
I mean, depends on how many they're expecting to sell, right?
But there's the maximum number you can sell at Gen Con based on the number of attendees, right?
But there's like 36,000 people who go to Gen Con.
Yeah, but 36,000 people are not buying this game at Gen Con. Even if, you know...
I want three.
Even exactly, even if you're buying three copies.
They're probably going to sell 4,000 or 5,000 copies.
Yeah, that sounds perfectly legitimate as a number. I don't know anything about their economics, but that number, it sounds like it's within the realm of possibility. I don't think it takes that long to print 5,000 of these if they already have it, you know, some.
How long is it till Gen Con from now?
4 months, roughly.
Four months?
Yeah, so I don't know. My instinct says that this is probably a mock-up, that this is to show it off, or that this is
with
the demo box.
Wraps?
But this might be the demo box that they're sending out to stores.
Maybe they have, like, tiered testing. Right? And this is the box they're sending to testers.
Maybe they just wanted to give the store owners a kind of sample how this product could look in their store.
Yeah, so they can
frame it. I think that's the most likely option here.
To put it like that.
I think we should just go ahead and wait until we see more full-fledged spoilers, and then we can base our assumptions on a little bit more actual official information.
Yeah. I doubt this is the way they intended for us first to see all this stuff. Let's put it that way. I mean, clearly they're very close to a completed product. They have to be if they're going to have everything up and running in 4 months. And I expect to see spoiler articles starting very, very soon. So we'll have a much better idea when we see one full card in, like, full resolution. And hopefully it's soon.
Yeah, I think there's not much more to say about this. It's just the backside of a box. It's not the game. It's not really anything, and we can't read half of the things. It's just...
Entire wars have been fought over the backsides of certain things.
Are we talking about games or women now?
Yes.
Yes. I don't want to commit to any misogynist statement on my own part.
Oh, boy.
It's okay. I'm the one who has to edit this, John, not you.
Excellent.
Any parting comments? Any?
Just the back of a box.
It's so much more, John.
No, really. It's not. It's just the back of a box. Today, we are joined by Dusty. I think this was the largest Octagon tournament they've had to date. You won it, so that's a huge props. And they actually had a slightly different format this time, right? Can you tell us a little bit about the tournament?
So the tournament itself was only locked to your house. So you told Dennis your house, and then he'd write it down. And then in a weird, I don't know why he decided to do this, but he told everybody's house. The actual format of the tournament, though, was a Swiss tournament. And you'd get your pairings each week. You'd have to finish it by Sunday. You were in it until you lost three times. It was a triple elimination to get out. And as long as you didn't lose three times, you got to stay in.
Yeah, he had piloted that the season before this, I believe.
He did. He had tested it.
And it had worked out fairly well, so I'm glad to see that format come back. This means that you know your opponent's house before you go into the match. Does that change the way you approach the game?
It didn't change the way I approached the game, but I know it did some others. There were definitely a couple complaints on the AGOT card thread about, oh, he teched for my house. You know, he knew I was playing Stark, so he put this in. I did have an issue where a few of my opponents actually ended up running Burning Bridges. I don't know if that's a tech because I'm Greyjoy or just because Burning Bridges is a good card.
Yeah, well, it's both. It's excellent against Greyjoy, though, so yeah. I mean, I guess if everybody's doing it, that's fine, and if nobody's doing it, that's fine. I guess the gray area is if only some people are doing it.
Well, in the newest Octagon, because they've already started the next league, and that one has no locks, period. Like, you can play any deck you want on any given week. In my personal opinion, is that the people who don't switch decks are probably going to be the ones who end up at the top. When you're familiar with the deck, when you know what you're doing, you're going to do better.
Yeah. But the flexibility means that people who approach the tournament differently can play, and if they don't like their deck, they can still play another two games or whatever.
Definitely. I actually changed my deck in this tournament once. In the third week, I played Wedge, and I lost, and it wasn't good. And I was playing Tyler Thompson's Greyjoy Dark Ring Dark Words. I played it, and I didn't enjoy it. And the new Aloof and Apart had come out, and I know I haven't talked about what deck I was actually playing yet, but it was Greyjoy Aloof and Apart.
Surprise.
And I wanted to test it out. And so I built something for it, and then I liked it, and so I just piled it to the end.
And once it did, was that a deck that you were playing outside of the league as well and refining and making a little better each week, or were you basically stick with your initial incarnation?
So I used it at two local store championships, each with only eight players. No, one had eight, one had 10 players. And I lost both. So the deck itself actually hasn't had any losses outside of those two store championships. In all of my testing on the Octagon League, it hasn't lost. In the finals of the first store championship, the TO came over and started to talk to me. He didn't play the game. He came over and started talking to me. And I'm a talker. I love to talk. You start talking to me, I'm going to ignore what I'm doing and talk to you. And that's what I did. It's the final game. I stopped paying attention to the final. And my opponent Valored. I had three saves. I just used them all. And then I got to the third one and realized, I can't use this Risen from the Sea on Tywin. If I had used my Iron Mines on Tywin, which is what I meant to do, who had six power on him, I would have just gone through the next turn and won the game. But because I was just discussing how to play the game with the TO, I wasn't even paying attention and lost. So that wasn't fun. That kind of sucked. And then the next store championship I took it to, I went the first two games only seeing one big guy in each game and then, like, nothing but weenies, and I just got destroyed. Like, they weren't good games. They were games where you just get smashed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you said big guys. So I think that kind of leads us into the deck itself. You said it's Greyjoy, Aloof and Apart. What was your restricted?
The restricted was the Conclave. I know a lot of people question the choice of that restricted. You know, is it the strongest restricted? What are your thoughts?
Well, John and I actually, about 2.5 weeks ago, we recorded a segment where we were going to build a deck, and we wound up building a Greyjoy Aloof and Apart that had the Conclave in it, mostly because we were trying to build around another card, and it was a terrible card, and the deck didn't work at all. But it turns out
that's not true. The deck worked. It's just the card we were building around wasn't useful
in it. But the Conclaves were really good in it.
Yeah. Greyjoy doesn't have a lot of overpowered restricted cards or really good restricted, so they actually have more flex than a lot of houses. So I think, you know, the Conclave fits into them better than it would into a Stark deck, for instance. You'd be almost crazy not to run Mira.
I completely agree. And when it came to choosing that as my restricted, it actually was because I was looking at the Greyjoy armies, you know, to use with Aloof. And they just have this huge lack of intrigue. And I said to myself, the Conclave is an amazing card. It deserves to be on the restricted list. That's why it's there. And this is a time where I can finally get to use it. I used to play Greyjoy Maesters way before everything got all restricted.
Yeah.
And so I was happy to try to use them again and fit them into the deck. And they slotted right in, no issues. I didn't have any other restricted I wanted to play. And they're amazing cards.
I am somewhat surprised because, as you mentioned, you have Tywin Lannister in here. You obviously have Asha. You have the Conclave. So you've got some good, renowned cards that you'd like to reuse in challenges. But you're not running, say, Game of Thrones or the Maester plot, a way to get multiple challenges out of those Conclaves.
No, I'm running the City line.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have Retaliation and Valor Morghulis in my last two.
Mm-hmm.
So with that plot line, did the Raven cause you any problems during all these games? Because you must have put in, 15 games with this deck? More? 20?
I did have my plots canceled. I know a lot of people say, at the gates, it's not good in this environment. You got some people running the Ravens, and they are. The way I see it is, when you cancel my at the gates, you've discarded a card, you've got rid of one of your cards, you know, so the card advantage is equal, and I still have a city plot. Like, you didn't waste my plot. It's still going to power up my other city plots.
Yeah, so, it does put you 3 gold behind, or 2 gold most of the time for you.
It's about 2 gold. Other thing is that currently the reason people are running so many of the Green Seers is to draw with Samwell.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're discarding their Green Seer, they're not only giving up the Green Seer card itself, but the 2 potential cards they would have drawn. So they're hurting their card advantage more than they're hurting mine.
Fair enough. I hadn't actually looked at it that way. There's one other point with this current meta that brings up a question for this deck, and that's, as you mentioned, Sam's very common, the Green Seer's Raven's very common, and so we've been seeing an increasing prevalence of Ygritte, who mm-hmm. can play merry havoc with your Conclaves.
Yes, Ygritte, she definitely can cause an issue. I haven't seen her, honestly. I haven't even really worried about her, but the way I would see that is I have 2 Harrenhals and a Seasick. I've got a better chance of drawing a Cancel than they have a drawn and a Grit. I mean, I should have something for her. If I don't, say she dies in the Valor, you can always use an Iron Mind to save the Conclave even if it's on the other person's control. Conclave, or the Iron Mind doesn't need you to have control of the character, sure. And you can still get your character back.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you. Like, the house that has the most answers to Ygritte in the form of Cancel is definitely Greyjoy, so it's probably the safest house to run the Conclave out of, unless you're trying to direct kill Ygritte somehow out of Stark.
A large reason as to why I chose the Greyjoy looking apart, not just because it was new and shiny, was because it has the save. The downside of Aloof and Apart is that when your characters die, you give up prize. But if they're not dying, then you don't have a downside.
I mean, it's a great call in a hyper-aggro meta, because the more aggro is around, the more those saves make a big difference on the game state. And with a lot of people playing Aloof and Apart, there's a lot of aggro around, so I can definitely see a value in that as well. What other things in the deck do you think are interesting or different enough to talk about?
Well, he doesn't have any Apprentice Colors. I tend to always throw some in when I'm thinking of the Conclave, especially with Greyjoy with only 3 Maesters. Did you ever consider that, or was it just not worth it for the economy or setups?
Well, I it's not something I've really considered, but I have more than 3 Maesters. I have 6. The Conclave are Maesters.
Yeah, but you can't fetch them at the gates. But yeah, you're right.
Yes. I'm not worried about.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Conclave you can't fetch with at the gates. I did have one game in all the testing I've done where I drew 3 Maesters back into my opening hand, and that all 3 of the ones that I could have gotten with at the gates, it sucked. But it's an annoyance more than anything. Getting the at the gates off, it's good for the deck. It's good for any deck, right? You want to get an extra card. That's why you played the plot. But if it doesn't come off, it's not one of those plots that if you mistime it, if you don't get to use it, it ends the game. I feel that the three Maesters is plenty enough for the At the Gates, and even just 3 Maesters is plenty enough for the Conclave, as they are also Maesters, as I said, but because you're getting reduced by looking apart in the first place. I mean, when I was playing a Conclave, playing it for more than 2 was pretty rare.
So, do you have any memorable matches? Like you said, you played 10 matches in the league and another, we'll say, 8 outside of it. Were there any ones that you thought were really interesting or worth talking about?
So, as far as interesting matches go, I would say this is not interesting as in, like, what happened was great, but from the standpoint of the deck itself, it's not a rush deck. But when I played Britt Fitch, he was playing Targaryen, Maester, Rust of Maesters before the Dany restriction. And so we sit down, or I sit down. I don't know what he was doing. He could be standing for all I care. But
the virtues of Octagon.
We get at the table, the virtual table, and he has an amazing flop. He has the Fighting Pits. He has Dany. He has Archmage Marwyn, and then he has a weapon to put on him. Like, he has everything to make the deck work. And then I think first turn I drop 2 Conclave or something. And then next turn, it's like Tywin and another big guy. And I end up rushing to victory on turn 3. On turn 3, and he has only made 2 challenges the entire game. He passed everything. And because there was not a challenge he could win. And then I just powered to victory in 3 turns with this, like, hyper-rush big guys that the deck wasn't meant to be, but was able to play as.
Yeah, it's nice to have that option, to have that versatility, mm-hmm. essentially.
What other big names did you bump into? I heard that you played some against Mrs. Shu in the final?
Yes, I actually played
Rachel Schumacher.
Yes, I actually played Rachel Schumacher twice, once in the final and once in round 9. I was her first loss, and it was right before the restriction. The restrictions had already been announced, the new ones, and the FAQ, but we went ahead and played without the restrictions and the FAQ fixes. And it was a good game, much better than our second game. Our finals game was not what you would call a good game. It was a bit of a – I just kept putting down cards, and then she would play – I think she played all 3 Brightwater Men at Arms, 3 turns in a row. But I had like a Nightmares to answer, or I had turn 1 – or no, it was turn 2 King Balin's Host. And so they weren't nearly as scary.
Without the deadly.
Yeah, and she had to Valor on turn 3, but then I had like another 2 saves, Risen from the Sea in my hand. So it wasn't a great game in like what you would say is a good game. But the game before that, on the 9th round, it was a super close game. Obviously, she doesn't know this, but I was very lucky. I do a challenge, throw a Longship Iron Victory in, to draw a card. I had to draw a Nightmares out of my deck. I have 2 Nightmares. I had to draw one to win the to not lose the game, actually, is what was happening. Because she had a Stannis with a bunch of Renown, and he was going to win the game that turn. And I drew into the one Nightmares I needed. And Nightmares Stannis. And after that, I was able to take control. I believe I Valored, saved some people. And from that point on, I was ahead of the game. I remember after the Valor, I had 2 Hammerhorn Raiders on the board, and was doing 4 claim military challenges for the next couple turns.
It's hard to recover from that.
Yeah, and so I won, but I barely pulled it out because I got the one card I needed, a top deck off of a mid-challenge Longship Iron Victory. She had no idea how close I was to actually losing that game.
Uh-uh. Well, she may well find out.
A lot of my deck is trying to include just a little bit of answers here and there for different things. And that's the city plots. Of course, they kind of came in with the conclave. I wanted to have a maester. But then also, you have City of Soldiers. It's going to let you kill that Samwell on turn 2. You have City Besieged, going to get rid of the Harrenhals. But then we look down at the list, and you see things like the Theon. But you also see that I'm running Scurvy Cutthroats times 3.
Well, this deck was built with Mel's favor in the meta, right?
This deck was built with Mel's favor in the meta. And at the time, though, when I built the deck, you, of course, could still Harrenhal the character that you stole, which made it not that useful. The main reason I actually included Scurvy Cutthroat was because Frozen Solid. Frozen Solid is why I included Scurvy Cutthroat. I hate Frozen Solid.
I imagine primarily on LIV.
LIV, or they like to put it on your Iron Mines. They'll put it on anything. They have no remorse. Anyone uses that card.
No conscience.
Yeah. And, of course, the 2 newly made lords, more location control.
You've played a tournament. You've won a tournament with this deck. What are your feeling about Greyjoy Aloof and Apart sort of going forward into the end of the store championship season, the regional season? Do you expect the deck to change a lot? Do you expect FAQs to hit this? Do you expect it'll do well in regionals?
To be honest with you, no. No, I do not. It's not that it's a bad deck. I think it's a great deck. Obviously, I kept playing it. But I think it's a deck for me. I built the deck because I enjoy it, but I'm not sure everyone else will. I actually showed this deck to a couple other, we'll call them pros, but we won't give them names. Don't want to call anyone out. Everyone's immediate reaction was, this is boring. What is this deck? What are you drawing with? Okay, for one thing, Greyjoy, they don't have that much draw. I've got 2 readers, 3 Longship Iron Victories, and then I've got the King Euron who can draw.
The Grand Melee, yeah, the one that draws off discards.
Like, really, what more do you want from me?
The Thunderer.
But,
yeah, what'd you say? John's still trying to convince me to play Thunderer.
The Thunderer. It's awesome.
Okay.
I have John played with that deck that we built last week with Bruno, and I had Thunder whiff on me once.
Anyway, as I was saying, I did show the deck list to a few people, and everyone's initial response was, how are you winning with this? Like, it looks boring. It doesn't look like I want to play it. It doesn't seem like it has a ton of synergy. And it was only, I don't know how to say his name, but Tom the Idiot.
Tagore, yeah.
Tagore? Okay. So it was only Tagore who saw it and said, this looks solid. You should win something with this. So...
Okay, we can't say that on air.
can't inflate his ego.
I just don't think it's a deck for everyone. I don't think we're going to see a lot of people take... I mean, for one thing, I'm not a big name. People don't care about my deck.
People care about decks that win.
Yeah,
that's true. You're right.
Any MVP card that you would stand out?
King Valenzos. I had it in there. I took it out because I never saw it. And I was just like, I'm not playing it anyway. Same spot. I got rid of it. And when I did show Tom the deck, he said, where's King Balance Host? And I said, it's somewhere. It's in my pile of cards. But he was like, maybe put it back in. So I did, and I had it in for the last two games of this tournament, and it definitely drove me to victory, both games. Like, just getting it out early shut so much down. I mean, it should also be noted that the last two games were against Spraythian decks, which being able to shut down their Deadly on their Brightwater Men-at-Arms, shutting down their Renown, their Stealth, whatever on their Stannis, is a big deal.
It don't have to convince us of that. We built an entire deck that was Black Seals because it could go get the King Valens Host.
I remember Gen Con 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the differences between this Octagon League and... a tournament, a normal style tournament where you go in, you do your full day. And I think there are some big differences that come to play and could be why certain people do better. In the Octagon League, you play over the course of probably, what was it, like 5 months? And it's about being consistent, right? Like, it's about when you go in to play a game, you can't just have a really good day. You have to have, every game's got to be a good day. And so you have to play more consistent, I think, to win. But the trade-off is that you don't have to have the endurance that it takes to play in a full day. You don't have to do 12 matches back-to-back.
And your matches are generally timed.
I gave some games. I played the Octagon a few times at the tournament. The first year, I lost to Rachel Shoemaker. The second year, I lost to Rachel Shoemaker, I think in the top four or eight or something. And then after that, I never made, top eight or whatever. But I found that some of the reasons for that was we get into a game and it'd be like 2 hours. Then I'd be like, I have to go. I don't have a choice. My kids are up, whatever. I got to go. So I guess it's to the opponent. But 2 hour games to me is a bit much. And I know that they've instituted a new rule towards that now, right?
Yes. In this league, actually, Dennis instituted the 1 hour rule. He said because the league should be for playtesting, for store championships, for regionals, or whatever, that we should follow the one-hour rule just the same.
And you should avoid playing a Bloodthirst deck that intends to go to plot 17. Yeah,
I faced one of those. It was horrible.
Was it Merrick? Isn't that all he plays?
Yeah, it was. Like it was.
So he instituted the rule. The issue was that Dennis only posted it on the front page of It Got Cards. And so it wasn't in any of the threads. So I'd go into my games, and I'd say, 1 hour limit starting when we draw our hands. And my response every single week was, what are you talking about?
You had to link it. And
Well, most people had no issue with it because they were playing decks. We're probably going to win. When I got to Mr. Shoe, Derek Schumacher, he had been playing a Stark, Night's Watch, all three agendas.
Ooh, yeah.
Not a deck that typically wins within an hour. And so we sit down, we have our decks, and I'm like, 1 hour from the time we both get our hand. And he was like, is that a rule? So I tell him, I reassure him, yeah, that's a rule. We get to the end of the hour, and I'm winning. But it is certain that I will lose. If the game goes on longer, I'm going to lose. I had... essentially, nothing that was going to stop him. He had big guys in hand. He had the wall on the table. There wasn't much I could do about it. Resets were coming up. I didn't have saves. So it became this thing where I basically said, if I can prove that Dennis said there would be a 1 hour time limit, then I will take the win. But if I cannot prove it to you, I will concede and take the loss. And so that's I had fair. To do a whole bunch of searching. You know, it had been like 2 months, and I was able to finally find it because I originally had thought it would be in one of the threads, and it just wasn't.
Yeah.
And I found it and screenshotted it, sent an email to him, and, you know, he was good about it, said, okay, that's fine. I'll take the loss. But it really shouldn't have happened like that. It shouldn't have had to happen like that.
It should have been in a thread for everyone to see.
Yes. You know, big props to Dennis for running things. He does a great job, and I know the other Fitch is taking care of Lauren's taking care of it now.
The winning Fitch.
The winning Fitch?
That's right.
Well, she is taking care of it now, but he made that mistake that no one really even noticed but me. You know, but I'm very picky about keeping with the rules. Every game went in after that hour.
Well, it's good that you said it up front, too. Like, if you hadn't, and you got to the hour, and you're like, oh, that's it. You know, I win.
Yeah,
then I would have lost my mind if I was your opponent. But since you're up front about it, that's a different story, you know?
Yeah. Well, it actually, I think it affected another one of my games, too, against Matt Cannon. Apparently, Matt Cannon had also been playing a Stark Night's Watch 3 agenda until round 10 when we played.
Mm-hmm.
And he played a Stark Siege because he had messaged me beforehand and said, can we not use the hour limit? And I said, no, we're using the hour limit.
And we play different Stark now.
Yeah, so he put down Stark Siege instead, and he did lose. I, you know, honestly don't know if that affected whether or not I would have won the game if he had just played his Stark Night's Watch and tried to lame it out and take the hour-long win.
Well, at least he knew about it, and again, he was able to adjust accordingly. Yeah. So that's,
I mean, yeah. It makes it way more likely that I'll play again because I had to take probably over the course of 2 times that I played, I had to take at least 4 losses because of time limits or the inability to match up opponents because I'm stuck only playing after my kids go to sleep, which can be, you know, 8:30, and that can be really tough, especially if it's international.
I see a lot of international people joining more than there ever had been before. It does cause some issues with finding a time to set up a match. I think it's great that we've got more international people joining, but at the same time, it's a little annoying. That
it can be tough, yeah.
The final thoughts here, I think Leaving Apart is the best agenda they've made in a while. Like, as far as being a balanced agenda, I don't feel like it's terribly better than other choices. But I also, I think it's strong enough that people will play it.
And people rethink how they build decks, which I think is something that agendas should do. I'm less of a fan of things that affect the play and could have been done with cards, but I'm more of a fan of one that says, okay, now this deck will be built completely differently because of it.
Honestly, I'm loving this, you know, the last throws of Agot 1.0 because of stuff like Aloof and Apart. And decks are so dynamic now, and there's so much cool stuff going on. You know, and you discovered a new archetype, basically, that did really well, because I don't think anyone else is going to say, well, Greyjoy Conclaves, that was my idea the whole time, you know? So, and you won a big tournament with it, so it's awesome.
Yeah, that means you get to name the deck.
Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, well, the name of the deck is actually, I have no idea how to say this guy's last name, but Kyle S. from New York.
Zelensky.
Yes, yeah,
Zelensky. There you go. So, he always posts really bad puns and just other random things on Facebook.
Yeah.
And so he said that all Aloof and Apart decks should be named with the first letter of your house as the start. So the name of this deck is Galoof and Gapart. And that's what I've been calling it ever since he posted that.
Galoof and Gapart? Galoof and Gapart?
Galoof and Gapart.
Galoof and Gapart it is. It's living down to the annals of history.
It's kind of funny because it's just GG, right?
Yes, GG.
Well, thank you very much for sharing the list and your experiences with it. Thank you for coming on the show.
It's not a problem. Not a problem at all. Thank you for having me. Thank Dennis for making the event and running it. Thank all my opponents for being stand-up people.
Closing comments, John. Any closing comments?
I think we should just keep it short. So just so our listeners know, we may be a couple days late on our next episode because I have some things going on at home.
Yeah, I would expect it no later than that Wednesday, but it probably won't be on the Monday. I was going to say, for closing comments, this is embarrassing, folks. We ran longer than 2C1C this week.
Bad us.
I don't know. We might as well just throw in the towel.
Yep, but we had twice the content.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
Final thing that I have to say, I already said the final thing once. This is the second final thing. Yeah, I've said the word final like 8 times. I should have been the first person to win with a Luthen apart. The week that Dark Nage won was the week that I talked to the TO and lost my final.
Ah, excellent. Well, John has to thank your TO then.